In towns and cities across Wisconsin, audiences are once again thrilling to the spectacle of performances on the stages of restored opera houses and theaters. And Brian Leahy Doyle of Hastings-on-Hudson, New York, is a theater director and a theater historian. He's a native of Schulzburg, Wisconsin, and is the author of the book Encore, The Renaissance of Wisconsin Opera Houses. It's published by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press. It's a beautiful book with some absolutely wonderful photography and also some great writing about the history of the theaters and the opera houses that are talked about in the book. And Brian is with us by phone now to talk about the book and to talk about these theaters. And I hope you'll join in as we move along today. Maybe you are from one of those communities where a theater or opera house has been restored, or maybe you've just visited. We'd love to hear from you about your experiences there, or maybe you were involved in the construction or the rehabilitation of these places. We'd love to hear from you as well. And if you just have a question, maybe you weren't involved at all, but just have a question about it, you can join us too. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Brian Leahy Doyle, welcome to the program. Thank you for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Well, thank you for inviting me and for that lovely introduction. I really appreciated all your kind words.
Well, I tell you what, unfortunately, we have lost in Wisconsin and probably across the country many of these landmarks. And the ones you write about in your book, many of them were once on the verge of being lost forever, I think. What drew you to Wisconsin for this project?
Well, let me backtrack a little bit. As you said, I'm originally from Schulzburg, Wisconsin, where I grew up. Went to the University of Wisconsin at Platteville, and at the time I began this project, I was teaching at a college in New York, and I got involved in just doing some research. I happened to be back in Schulzburg for one of my sister's birthdays, and she mentioned that the theater in Schulzburg was in the process of being restored. So got on the phone, called up the people who were in that process, and started doing research on this theater, began to get very deeply involved in the research, and thought, you know, maybe I have a book here. And I contacted Kathy Borkowski at the Wisconsin Historical Society Press and said, what would you think about a book about the Copeland Opera House in Schulzburg? And she said, interesting idea, but I don't know if it has a broad market appeal. What would you think, Brian, about writing a book about all of these, about theaters across the state of Wisconsin? And I heard opportunity knock, and the rest, as they say, is history.
So this must have taken some time to write.
Yes, probably. I really started the project about 6 years ago, in terms of, you know, looking at that first theater, and then probably in the last 4 years began, you know, broadening the scope of the research, finished the manuscript about 2.5 years ago, and then went through a wonderful sort of developmental edit of the book beginning last year, last fall, the book has come to press.
I tell you what, the beautiful photography in this book, it's remarkable photography. Mark Fay of Eau Claire.
That's right. My joke about it is that I wrote the text that accompanies Mark's beautiful photos because they are just absolutely gorgeous. So, Mark, if you're listening in, you know, they are really gorgeous. And the theaters themselves are really beautiful theaters. You you feel a hush over your over yourself when you step onto the stage or into the auditorium of each of these theaters.
How did you two hook up for this project?
Mark was essentially assigned to the project. So, in fact, we've actually never met. So we haven't met yet. In fact, I'm flying out to Wisconsin for a book tour, and I'm going to actually meet him at the book launch at the Mabel Tainter Theater in Menominee on, I think, Friday, October 16th. So it'll be a fun experience, actually shaking hands. We've talked over the phone, of course, and exchanged emails and all that kind of stuff, but never met. So, but he's a wonderful photographer, and he's just done a marvelous job.
Well, you mentioned the Mabel Tainter Theater, and that's one of the theaters that you highlight in the book. It was a real treat for me to be able to read again about it and to see the wonderful photography. It's one of the houses that I had a chance to see a play at, and really enjoyed that experience very much. But maybe you can tell us a little about the history of that particular theater.
Yeah, in a nutshell, the theater was built by a lumber baron by the name of Andrew Tainter. And he and his wife had a daughter who died at the age of 19 of what they think was probably, well, they called it at the time, cancer of the stomach or cancer of the side or something like that, and I think it was probably like a burst appendix or something. And Tainter was a rough and ready kind of fellow, but his wife was taming the rougher edges. And one of the things that she had him do was join the Unitarian Society in Menominee. Reverend, and I think his name was Maxon Doty or something like that. I confess, I forget that detail. But he persuaded the Tainters to build this theater as a memorial to Mabel, because she was a lover of the arts. And it is a gorgeous theater. It's designed in the Richardsonian Romanesque Revival style, both inside and out, it's a beautiful theater. A lot of the interior of the auditorium has all this beautifully carved wood and Moorish and Saracen designs throughout the auditorium. It's really quite beautiful. It's breathtaking.
One of the great stories about that the theater was that he built the seats in different widths.
That's right. Small, medium, and large.
To accommodate his thin friends and his more robust, you might say.
Yeah, yes, and that's actually an interesting sort of a little sidebar. There is that with a lot of these theaters, the seats are smaller for people to, or people are larger today. So with a number of the theaters that had to that have been restored, they've had to take out seats in order to enlarge the widths of seats so that people can sit comfortably in the restored theater.
And a theater like that, the restoration of, let's take that theater. We'll talk about other theaters as well as we go along, but it takes an inspired group of people working together.
Mm-hmm. It does. That was a theater that has gone through a number of different restorations.
Yes, it has.
Mm-hmm. I think the first really began in the mid-1950s, and then there was, various restoration projects. Most recently, the Mabel Tainter did a restoration project that also involved building an annex to the building that enabled an elevator to reach all the different floors, and in part that was funded by the Jeffries Foundation of Janesville, which has been involved with the restoration of a number of the theaters in Wisconsin.
Yeah, it definitely has. We're visiting with Brian Leahy Doyle today of Hastings-on-Hudson, New York, originally from Sulzberg, Wisconsin, and he is the author of the book Encore, The Renaissance of Wisconsin Opera Houses. It's published by Wisconsin Historical Society Press, and he'll be with us until 12:30 today. Join in with your questions here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look today at Wisconsin's rich theatrical and architectural heritage through the eyes of Brian Leahy Doyle of Hastings-on-Hudson, New York, theater director, theater historian, native of Sulzberg, Wisconsin, and author of Encore, The Renaissance of Wisconsin Opera Houses. It's published by Wisconsin Historical Society Press, and we're pleased to have him with us today to talk about the book and to talk about these opera houses and theaters that have been restored. He has 10 of them in his book with some great writing and some amazing photography of these opera houses and theaters. And I tell you, just look at the photos and you want to go and visit and see and experience. And having visited a few of them, I can tell you that it's well worth the price of admission for sure. Questions for him or comments? As I said, maybe you were involved in the work of some of these, or maybe you have questions about their background. I hope you'll join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us, and that address is talk@wpr.org. And Brian, at one time, I think maybe 50 years ago, the word opera had a far different meaning, perhaps, than it does today. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Yes, that's a great point, a great topic. These theaters were called opera houses in the late 19th century because there was a stigma attached to actors. So you wouldn't want to call a theater a theater because that's where actors were. So they were called opera houses because it connoted a sophistication and aspiration of culture, and so they were called opera houses. And there's a slight distinction between what are called opera houses and what are called opera halls. The theater in Sulzberg, for instance, is an opera hall, which was a second-story theater that was built over a two-story building, but it was built over a storefront. And then you have a theater like the Grand Opera House in Oshkosh, which is a standalone building and it's just a theater, and that's actually a beautiful theater too. I don't know if you've been to that theater or not.
No, I have not.
Oh, it's beautiful. I mean, it's just really quite gorgeous, with all sorts of beautiful stenciling on the walls, it's just a gorgeous theater. I'm going to leave it at that.
As an aside here, what was the problem or the perceived problem with actors?
Well, you know, they were sort of perceived sometimes as charlatans, especially in small towns. A lot of my research, Larry, was done, especially in the small town theaters, was done by reviewing microfilm cassettes of small town newspapers, and weekly newspapers, and the newspaper in my hometown in Sulzberg, the editor of the paper often wrote very extensively about what was happening at the opera house, not only what was being performed there, but comments about the performance, sometimes comments about the audience, and sometimes comments about the performers themselves. And sometimes there were, complaints about the performers. That there was one, and I think it's in the book where there was something in the paper about this one theater company that it fell apart. The reason: too much beer. things like that. I mean, they were sometimes show people were sometimes perceived as charlatans and characters and just really rich stuff. Really, really rich stuff to read. I mean, I would find myself chuckling as I was, writing down or recording this information.
I wanted to mention, and should have mentioned earlier, that the theaters that are included are the Pabst Theater in Milwaukee, the Mabel Tainer Theater in Menominee, the Al Ringling Theater in Baraboo, the Grand Opera House in Oshkosh, the Stoughton Opera House, a beautiful place, the Thrasher Opera House in Green Lake, the Mineral Point Opera House, the Temple Theater in Viroqua, the Independence Opera House, and the Copeland Opera House in Schulzburg. So those are the 10. And Carl's online with a question or a comment maybe relating to the Oshkosh Opera House. So let's go to Carl. Carl, hi. Thank you for calling.
Maybe the author can elaborate on my comment. I did my undergraduate work at what was then the State University in Oshkosh, graduated in 1965, and attended several performances at the Opera House as it was then, before it was renovated, and it wasn't too shabby back then. I mean, I saw Segovia there. Well, I won't go through that. What happened was, I lived a charmed life, and I worked at the Oshkosh Public Museum and had access to a lot of the archives there, and I think it was the Daily Northwestern. I remember being enthralled by the recounting of the grand openings at the Oshkosh Grand Opera House in the 1800s.
Yeah, it was in 1883, I believe. Yeah,
and it was heavily subsidized by the lumber barons, and these people were not paupers. I mean, they were right up there with the richest people in the country. Right. And my recollection is that for the grand opening every season, people would take trains from all over the country. I'm talking about the Hudson Valley, Patroons, the Mellons, the Carnegies, people of that sort for the grand opening. And it was quite a gala event, and they had the best opera performers in the world there.
Right. Well, a lot of the performances that the type of drama was performed was what we would call operetta, which was sort of a forerunner to the musical comedy. But yes, it was that was a very gala event, and the Grand Opera House as a theater was on a number of there were basically lines of theaters where the different shows would come through, and so you had people like James O'Neill, the father of Eugene O'Neill, playing in The Count of Monte Cristo and the like. So, yeah.
Thanks a lot, Carl. Appreciate your call. So people got to see some pretty amazing performances.
Yeah, some really big names went through, played in a number of the larger theaters. I would say the Pabst, obviously, the Al Ringling Theater, the Grand Opera House, because those theaters were often on tour circuits. Less so, I would say, in the theaters in the smaller towns, but often. Often they had, the Mineral Point is an interesting exception because it was also, got a number of Broadway touring companies that went through from the late teens into their early 20s. The railroad was really, the development of the railroad was really important in terms of the development of these theaters because if a railroad line came through, you could build a theater, and people, touring companies could come to your
theater. Could get there.
Yeah.
What were the acoustics? And I mean, they're just beautiful theaters. What were the acoustics like in those theaters?
Well, they were impeccable because the theaters were designed to be as perfectly acoustic as possible. In my research, I traveled throughout Wisconsin at a number of different times, and would be given tours of the theaters. And with theaters like the Pabst and the Al Ringling Theater, you know, during the interview, when I would be interviewing the guide, they would tell me that, you know, they would have groups come in and perform today and really crank up the amps. And the audience members would come up to the theater staff at intermission saying, "It's too loud. It's too loud." You know, because the acoustics were so good, you don't need to really crank up the amps in these theaters because the acoustics are so good.
Yeah,
they were designed for an actor.
Designed for an actor, so even an actor who was speaking in a whispering voice, that voice could still be heard at the furthest seats.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Reed in Clintonville, it's your turn. Hi, Reed.
Hi, fellas. Great opportunity here to just share a little bit of my history, in the sense that I'm an Oshkosh-born fella. And my dad worked at the Atherin Hotel, which the site now is occupied by a bank there in Oshkosh. But there was always the story, and I never had the forethought to ask my dad if it was accurate, that there was a tunnel so that celebrities could travel from the hotel to the Grand Opera House. I wish I had thought to ask him if I could have come and explored that possibility. The other aspect of the Opera House was, as a kid, of course, growing up in Oshkosh, we had four theaters, one on the south side and three on the north side there, and the Grand every Saturday showed serials, and for 10 cents you could get in and sit there all day in the dark watching these serials over and over and over again, and the theater was pretty well run down and in need of a lot of repair. My wife and I have since then gone to performances there since it's been restored, and of course now they had the roof problems, but those are being taken care of, so we're so happy that the Grand is back to its former glory. But those Saturdays will stay in my memory forever.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that.
Thanks, Reed. Appreciate your call. 10 cents all day.
All day, yeah, wow. That's a price you can't beat today. Yeah.
Rusty and Marshall will turn to you. Hi, Rusty.
Hello, Larry. The conversation before was about the stigma applied to actors, and I was just wondering if this is a relation to the assassination of Lincoln by a conspiracy of people in the theater industry. Because these theaters were built 15, 20, 25 years after that, and I'm sure the country was still reeling from that.
Yeah, I would say the stigma goes probably back to the Greeks. I think that's just historically has been one of the one of the dilemmas of being in the theater, is that, you know, people love the shows, but they don't always there's always a certain mistrust of actors. Even if you become president of the United States.
Yeah, and probably it didn't help, though, when Lincoln was assassinated.
It probably didn't. No, yeah, I would imagine it would be a blow to the profession, as it were.
Thanks, Rusty. Appreciate the call and the comment. And we'll take some more comments. You can join in, too, by the way. We have some open lines at 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. Let's turn to John in Appleton next. John, hello.
Well, hello. Years ago, there were a lot of different organizational-owned halls and other buildings that were used for a little bit smaller performances like plays and fundraisers, and they didn't have actual seating. They had chairs, and I'm an organization member of an organization that still owns one of those halls. We're one of two Grange halls left in the state. And our hall still has its old staging from 1929, and the curtains and everything still the same way, but we don't have enough interest in that kind of use of the hall. But boy, if there were groups out there that can use the smaller buildings as they were for plays and performances years ago, it would be wonderful for a lot of the good it would mean to a lot of buildings and communities. And I'm curious to know if you think that there are such groups out there to put on plays a little bit smaller than the big performances.
Well, I wish I could say. I'm in New York, so it's a little bit difficult for me to really comment upon that. Where are you located?
Oh, west of Appleton.
West of Appleton, is the hall on the National Register of Historic Buildings?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Our page is only 17 by 19, you see, but there were a lot of different groups put on plays there years ago, and it's how the hall paid part of its way.
Sure, sure. I would say probably it would be. Yeah, I wish I could really give you a really good answer to that question, but that's sort of a little bit outside of my knowledge. But what you might want to consider is giving the management of one of the theaters in the book a call and find out how they book their talent or whatever suggestions that they might have. I've found them to be very, very helpful with that sort of information. And, someone at the Grand Opera House and Oshkosh might be able to help.
Might be able to help out. And you have information in the book.
That's right.
About sort of the background of who's in charge and that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah, and also if you go on the internet, every one of these theaters has a website, and you can find information that way.
Yeah. Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call, John. Jake in Stoughton, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Jake.
Hi. I have just a comment on the. I've actually worked in the Stoughton Opera House, which is aesthetically beautiful. What they've done with it. My question for your caller or for your guest is: do you find that in your experience with the Opera House restorations that the restoration has taken precedent over modern conveniences or modern technology? I know in the Opera House in Stoughton, they kept all of the wooden seats, which are aesthetically beautiful, but from an audience perspective, they're a little small, a little cramped, a little uncomfortable.
Right.
Do you find that that's taken into consideration when they are restoring a lot of these opera houses nowadays, modern conveniences?
I would agree with that. That there's a lot of times they want to keep as much of the original structure and the original. Amenities or not amenities, as the case may be, but it also along with that, with each of these theaters, there's also been an attempt to upgrade things like the heating, air conditioning, access, public access to the building to meet ADA standards and
that sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Jake, for calling. Appreciate your call. Most of these opera houses were not built for personal gain, were they, or were they?
I would say that's pretty accurate. Yeah. I think if anything, you could say that if somebody built an opera house for his own, and attached his name to it, he built it to so almost sort of a memorial to himself and as a gift to his community, and that same sort of gift to the community is also, I think, at the heart of the restoration at the heart of these restoration projects by the people in these communities. They really want to give something to their community, everybody who was involved volunteered their time, energy, talent, and sometimes in-kind services. So.
Lisa in La Crosse says a theater that's near and dear to La Crosse is the Rivoli, which is being restored now.
Oh, excellent. I guess that'll have to be an encore, too.
And sort of the experience, you write about the experiences, that sort of the history, of course, of these opera houses and theaters and the renovations that take place. And beyond that, I think for each of these communities, would you say that it has been a boon for the communities?
I think so. I would say it's been a boon. And often, you know, there's some interesting stories. Sometimes restoring the theater instead of tearing down the building and building up and building something that is aesthetically less appealing is a better use of money. But actually, I think the theater in Independence, the Independence Opera House, there had been a decision that had to be made whether to restore the building and the theater or to tear it down and put up a something else for the City Hall building. And they realized that it would be less expensive to restore the building than it would be to tear it down and put up something, again, less aesthetically pleasing.
Well, it's not an opera house, but the building that I teach in the Department of Life Sciences Communication, and we, about a year and a half ago, moved into a building called Hiram Smith Hall that is one of the oldest buildings on campus, but restored. And it still has all the modern, the great recording studios and the great classrooms and so forth, but it's maintained a lot of that old character. And people love that building. And just as I'm sure people in Shoalsburg and Stoughton and Baraboo and Green Lake and Mineral Point love their opera houses and theaters. It's been a real pleasure, Brian, talking with you today. Thank you so much. And you, by the way, your book launch is when?
The book launch is on Friday, October 16th, I believe, at the Mapleton Interest Theater. And I'm going to be actually doing a number of book signings throughout Wisconsin during that following week, and information can be about that can be found on the Wisconsin Historical Society Press's website.
So go to the Wisconsin Historical Society Press website, and I expect you're probably going to be in most of those towns that you write about.
I am.
I'm sure of that.
I'm going to be burning some gasoline.
All right, Brian, thanks again.
Thank you, Larry. This was a treat.
That's been a real pleasure. Brian Leahy Doyle of New York now, formerly of native of Shoalsburg, Wisconsin, author of the book Encore, The Renaissance of Wisconsin Opera Houses. I hope you have a chance to take a look at it. Just some of the most great writing and some beautiful photography. You're going to love looking at those opera houses. Appreciate him being with us today. Tomorrow, Phil Pelletieri joins us to take a look at the world of insects. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us on the Ideas Net.